Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. Watch, chop, retrofit.
So I want to give a shout out here off the top to Melatonin. I mentioned to you the other night, I haven't been sleeping so well lately, but I downed about 9 milligrams of melatonin last night.
Okay.
Slept great.
Awesome.
This is not a pandemic insomnia podcast. Welcome to season 7, episode 12, halfway through season 7, dude.
Nice.
Of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is
Crazy in Travabama, aka Bonfire of the Travanities.
Oh yes. those are both great. And I am joined by my co-host and co-producer, Stormy Shonday, aka Shawning Through, aka Seanfire of the Vanities.
Oh, good. Okay.
We are also extremely excited to announce in absentia Chelsea's nicknames because she couldn't be with us today. First, Buffalo Chels, aka Chelita, aka Crazy in Chelabama. A lot of overlap on nicknames this week.
Yeah, really.
Further description of the show, the tagline says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films with iconic actors, and then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of the remake, reboot, sequel-dependent cinematic culture. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
And so at this point in the show, I usually ask if you have a good example of a bad remake.
I do.
What do you got?
It's going to be a Melanie Griffith film, and it is Born Yesterday.
Born Yesterday is a remake of
the 1950 original, which was an adaptation of the play by the same name.
Gotcha. Very good. My example is The Parent Trap. The 1998 Lindsay Lohan version is unnecessary and inferior as a remake of the 1961 Haley Mills original. So we're going to go into movie news now, okay?
Okay.
So this is where we talk about some stories that we think that our listeners might find interesting or that are pertinent to our show or our topic. And unfortunately, we have how many RIPs this week?
Is it 5?
5 RIPs. So I'm gonna do, we'll go back and forth because you've got 2 and I've got 3, right?
Good, yeah.
All right, so first, RIP to Renny Santoni. Renny Santoni was best known as Poppy on Seinfeld, and in honor of him, I'm peeing on your couch.
That's cool.
And he was also in Dirty Harry. He died at the age of 81 after, quote, a long illness.
All right, RIP to Wilford Brimley, age 85.
Was it diabetes?
It was not diabetes. It was, I forgot, I think he'd been ill for quite some time. It was just one of those old age, long complication.
Gotcha. Next, we've got Jacqueline Scott, who was a major TV actress, but also did some film work. She was in The Fugitive, and I'm assuming that's the Fugitive TV show.
Yeah.
And also Charlie Varick. She died at the age of 89 after a battle with cancer.
RIP goes out to Sir Alan Parker. He was the director of Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Okay.
He was also the director of The Commitments.
Oh,
he's
wow.
Dead at age 76.
Bummer. RIP to Tom Pollock. He was a lawyer who brought about one of Hollywood's greatest deals, the one that gave George Lucas the sequel rights to Star Wars. And that's going to finish up the RIP. So rest in peace and rest in power to the 5 of them this week. Walmart announces free drive-in movie screenings of Black Panther, Lego Batman, E.T., and more. It's very rare that you'll find me doing a positive story about Walmart.
Right.
And I went on, it said, check this website at 5 p.m. the day the story broke. And I went at 5 p.m. and our town in South Carolina is not participating, but some other towns in South Carolina are. The next day when I clicked on it, all of the showings in South Carolina were sold out.
Wow.
So maybe some of our listeners in other states can take advantage of that. It's called walmartdrivein.com to check the availability.
My big question is, will Walmart be enforcing a dress code?
Oh, they should. Oh, a theater owner destroys a Mulan display following Disney's VOD announcement.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy.
Gerard Lemon, the owner of Cinepal in Palaiseau, Paris, took a baseball bat to a Mulan display following Disney's moving the film to Disney Plus. Yeah, he needs to get a grip. I'm Thinking of Ending Things is the title of the new Charlie Kaufman movie headed to Netflix. For listeners, tell them who Charlie Kaufman is.
Oh, geez. Synecdoche, New York.
Adaptation.
Anomalisa.
Anomalisa. Also, did he not write the script for Being John Malkovich that Spike Jonze directed?
Possibly,
yeah.
I think
he did. The King's Man director says that this prequel sets the stage for Kingsman 3. How do you feel about that?
That's cool, I guess.
Do you like the Kingsman movies?
There are elements of it that I do like. Was it Mark Strong?
Yes.
I really, really like him.
And also Colin Firth and Eddie the Eagle. So I think that those are some good films so far, the first two of them.
Yeah.
I don't know that they necessarily needed a trilogy or a prequel to set up the trilogy. They might be getting a little greedy there. Finally, we're going to end this on a really good note. Captain Marvel sequel lands a female African-American director named Naya DaCosta. This would make her the first ever black woman to direct a movie from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She also was tapped by Jordan Peele to direct his new version of Candyman.
Yeah, that's going to set some incels into a frenzy on the internet. Yeah.
Also, the script for the Captain Marvel sequel is also by a female writer. Her name is Megan McDonnell, and she's known for WandaVision.
Yes, that's the new television series that's coming up.
All right, so do you hear some early 90s hip-hop beats?
Yeah, I think so.
That must mean it's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Hi, Choppers. Hope you're well. I haven't slept in days. Joe's pick for Johnny Depp's character is James Joshua Blake. He inverted the first and middle names. Jane Levy is the lead actress in Zoe's Extraordinary playlist. I read that Jack Nicholson and Robin Williams were considered for the role of Freddy Krueger. Can you imagine? That would have been a really intense or a really spastic portrayal. Did you hear that? See you next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. We appreciate your hard work. And I know that Joey is sweating in his cell over there over that little mix-up. And also, there's a nightmare on my street. That will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, bringing us to the theme of the episode. In celebration of her 63rd birthday on August 9th, when this goes kerplunk, the films of Melanie Griffith. So a little bit of background information on her. She was born in New York City to model and future actress Tippi Hedren, and also the advertising executive Peter Griffith, not to be confused with Peter Griffin. Melanie Richards Griffith is an American film, stage, and television actress and film producer. She began her career in the 1970s, appearing in several independent thriller films before achieving mainstream success in the mid-80s. In 1975, a then 17-year-old Griffith appeared opposite Gene Hackman in Arthur Penn's film noir, Night Moves. She later rose to prominence for her role portraying a pornographic actress in Brian De Palma's thriller Body Double from 1984. Which earned her a National Society of Film Critics Award for Best Supporting Actress. Griffith's subsequent performance in the comedy Something Wild in 1986 garnered critical acclaim before she was cast in 1988's Working Girl, which earned her a nomination for the Academy Award for Best Actress and won her a Golden Globe. Later roles include Shining Through, the John Waters cult film Cecil B. Demented, Pacific Heights, Milk Money, Mulholland Falls, and she played Charlotte Hayes in Adrian Lynn's version of Lolita. After acting on stage in London in 2003, she made her Broadway debut in a revival of the musical Chicago, receiving celebratory reviews. In the 2010s, Griffith returned to film, starring opposite then-husband Antonio Banderas in the science fiction film Automata in 2014. And as an acting coach in James Franco's The Disaster Artist in 2017. What else do we need to say about Melanie Griffith? She's had her troubles. She had troubles with addiction. She's been married four times, two of which times were to the same man, Don Johnson.
You know, she has successfully built a career on a very limited range.
A limited acting range?
Yes.
I agree.
She kind of plays the same part over and over again with variations.
The tough cutesy pie.
Yeah. And she does bear a lot of skin in a lot of her films.
Yes.
And unfortunately, she's not aged gracefully.
Not as much. I think that there's some plastic issues facially there.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate too much, but she was in her heyday in the 80s and 90s, for
absolutely.
Sure.
All right, so with that, we're going to go ahead and head into our next segment, which is the Midnight Double Feature. And this is where Sean and I are each going to take two films that are within the category at hand, this week being the films of Melanie Griffith, and we'll talk about how they're related to each other and why they would be a good pairing for a double feature. And Sean, do you want to give us yours first?
Sure. I'm going to go with two films directed by Brian De Palma.
Okay.
And you've already mentioned one, which was 1984's Body Double.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, stars Melanie Griffith in the role of the pornographic film actress who is hired to be the body double for actor Craig Wasson. No, Wasson, sorry.
Okay.
Craig Wasson. Which, as a kid, I saw just the dirty parts.
Right.
And
fast-forwarding on the VHS.
Yeah. And in my mind, I had conflated that lead actor as being Bill Maher.
Oh, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
That's
a lot like Bill Maher looked in those days.
Yeah.
So just a quick breakdown of the plot. He's a young actor. He's obsessed with spying on beautiful women. He also has claustrophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, not to give away too much of the plot, but he's set up.
Okay.
And he witnesses something that he thinks is a crime and then somehow becomes the number one suspect of that crime. And Melanie Griffith's character, Holly Boddy, is mixed up in that whole plot.
Yeah.
And it's not Brian De Palma's greatest film.
But it was his direct homage to Hitchcock.
Yeah, you and I talked about this Wednesday night, and that is I consider it to be like Rear Window.
The voyeuristic thriller.
But sleazy cocaine 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it hits it in that regard,
right,
for sure. And I'm going to pair that with, and I'm kind of pivoting here at the last second, I'm going to pair that with The Bonfire of the Vanities.
Okay.
From 1990. And this stars Tom Hanks and Melanie Griffith and Bruce Willis. And Tom Hanks is a very wealthy young man in New York City. And Melanie Griffith is his mistress. Kim Cattrall plays his wife, by the way.
Right.
And they're out on the town and they go for a drive and take a wrong turn, end up in the Bronx, and accidentally clip a young African-American man who ends up in a coma. And Tom Hanks is number one suspect for that. But in truth, Melanie Griffith was driving the car at the time, but she's not about to take the fall. It becomes a courtroom drama with some twists and turns, and it's pretty good. It's okay.
Gotcha.
I did not mind this one at all. I thought it was quite all right, and Morgan Freeman is in this, as well as Saul Rubinek.
You were saying that Morgan Freeman has a completely bald head, right?
Yeah, Morgan Freeman's a badass in this movie. He is the judge, and he takes no shit. And he's very refreshing in that role, kind of acting a little more emphatically than I'm used to seeing
him. Like the Lean on Me character?
Yeah.
Where he takes Pookie up to the roof.
Yeah, yeah. Very much along those lines.
Do you want to die? Is that what you want?
Yep.
All right, cool. I like it. So my my pairing is the connection is very tacit. So first, I've got Shining Through from 1992. It's got a 44% on Rotten Tomatoes, directed by David Seltzer. Yep. Spirited New Yorker Linda Moss, Melanie Griffith, goes to work for an international lawyer and secret office of strategic services operative Ed Leland, played by Michael Douglas. Just before World War II, as they fall in love, the United States enters the fight against Hitler and Linda volunteers to work for Ed, spying undercover behind Nazi lines. Assigned to uncover information about a German bomb, Linda also has personal motives to fulfill, discovering the fate of her Jewish family members in Berlin. Additional casts include Liam Neeson, Jolie Richardson, and John Gielgud. I call him Dr. Gielgud. So then I'm going to pair that with A Stranger Among Us, also from 1992. And it's only got a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes. I remember it being better than that score. Haven't seen either of these in a long, long time, but I have seen them multiple times on VHS. This one's directed by Sidney Lumet. And a tough New York cop is put on the case of a young Hasidic diamond cutter who has gone missing with a fortune in gems. But the apparently open and shut case becomes more complicated when his body turns up, minus the diamonds. When she must go undercover in the Hasidic community to track down the killer, the cop experiences events which change her life. So obviously the first connection is they both came out in 1992. They both star Melanie Griffith, but they both deal with Jewish subjects. In one, she's going undercover as a spy to basically bring down the Nazis after she learns that her Jewish family members have been killed. And in the other, she's going undercover in a Hasidic Jewish community to uncover a murder plot. So that's my connection there. Have you seen either of these?
I have not, and I was very tempted to see the second one this week. And so I was curious, what are you recommending either of these?
I'm going to recommend them both, but I recommend Shining Through more.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
There's definitely some things that they poke fun at, like she speaks German Shining Through, but her accent is wrong for the region that she's in.
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of gets called out on that, and she covers it up. She's like, well, my mother was from this other region or whatnot. It's a more solid film.
Okay.
I have a
light recommend on both of mine.
Mm-hmm.
For various reasons.
Cool deal. I think that means it's time to get into our feature segment, and this is The Recast. And that's where we take a particular film within the catalog of Melanie Griffith this week. Now, every week we're going to do Melanie Griffith. and then we talk about it a little bit, and then we hypothetically recast a few of the main roles with contemporary actors who are
at the height of their powers.
And the first one that we are going to recast today is going to be Cherry 2000 from 1987. It's got a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was directed by Steve Desjarnais. And it is a post-apocalyptic film set in the distant future of 2017 in California. We've got Sam Treadwell, played by David Andrews. Did we ever get into what his actual occupation was? Some sort of businessman?
Yeah.
He shows up in a suit.
Yeah. He lives in Anaheim, which he says several times at the beginning of the film, and gets a lot of laughs from the outsiders.
But he manages a recycling plant. Okay, I've got it right here. His companion is Cherry 2000, played by Pamela Gidley, a lifelike robot who caters to his every need. Note, this is a side note, Gidley died at her home in 2018 at the age of 52, and officially the cause of death has not been disclosed. Then, when Cherry expires, Treadwell refuses to settle for a newer, less attractive robot. Salvaging the chip containing her personality, he hires tracker E. Johnson, played by Melanie Griffith, to lead him through the lawless desert zone, where a replacement for Cherry can be found at an abandoned factory. What else have we got going on here, Sean?
Well, we have a Hawaiian shirt death cult.
Uh-huh.
And it's awesome.
The leader of the death cult looks like a cross between Ric Flair and Treat Williams.
Oh, I've got an even better look-alike for you, but that's coming up later.
The sex robots are called Gynoids.
Wow.
There's lots of interesting locations like Glory Hole City, the Sky Ranch, and I can't remember what the name of the factory was.
Oh man, it's like an Egyptian term,
something like
that.
Oh no, it was an old casino. It was Pharaoh's something.
Yeah, Pharaoh's Casino. Yep.
All right, so let's get into the roles that we're recasting, okay?
Sure.
First, we've got Edith E. Johnson, the tracker, played by Melanie Griffith, who was 30 at the time. We've got Sam Treadwell, the recycling plant manager. He dresses awfully nice for a recycling plant manager. Played by David Andrews, who was 35. Then we have Lester, the leader of the death cult, played by Tim Thomerson.
That sounds like a made-up name.
It really does. I think he might have actually been born Tom Timmerson, and he tried to switch it around. Then we've got Cherry 2000, the gynoid, played by Pamela Gidley, who was just 22 at the time. And then finally, we've got the role of Snappy Tom, played by Harry Carey Jr., not to be confused with...
Harry Carey!
Jr., who, incidentally, obviously both of their dads were named Harry Carey. It's spelled differently. One's an A-Y, one's a...
E-Y.
But Harry Carey Jr., the actor, his father, Harry Carey, was also an actor.
Right.
Harry Carey Jr., the broadcaster, his father was also a broadcaster. And I believe his son as well, right?
Chip, yep.
Yeah, so...
Chip and Skip, I'm sorry.
Chip and Skip. Okay, so then we've got... yeah, that's it. So let's go ahead and get into the first one. Melanie Griffith. And she is the sexy butch haircut outlaw bounty hunter type, right?
Yeah. Before I jump into my recast, I mean, we'll talk about a little bit of the aesthetic of this. It reminds me very much of the first Mad Max film.
Oh yeah.
In a American Southwest setting.
Uh huh. And there's also a lot of like 50s references, like 50s Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Hawaiian shirt death cult coupled with their outpost looked like a almost like a very upscale trailer park.
Okay, I can see that. It actually was filmed at a desert resort place. That scene.
It very much is a point A to point B type linear of film. They're trying to get to a certain point and all the troubles they encounter. So, with all those things in mind, my recast is an actress who is 31 years old. And she's quite capable of playing in post-apocalyptic films. She was in a film called American Honey. It comes at night, the house that Jack built. But ooh. I'm leaning heavily on her role as capable in Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
I went with Riley Keough.
Riley Keough! I love it. I love it. And you did a visual aid for me.
I did.
Yours is better than mine, even though Riley Keough's one of my favorites, and so is this. I've recast her, I've chopped her many times, but that's not going to stop me now. So my Melanie Griffith is 35 now. She was in The Spectacular Now, she was in Death Proof, she was in Swiss Army Man, and Birds of Prey. It's Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, good. Yeah. That would be very, very good.
If she wouldn't be aged out, I was thinking of the girl from The Fifth Element.
Oh yeah, I did
think
too.
That character was kind of inspired by Cherry 2000 a little bit.
I totally thought of I looked at her this week. What's her name? Mila Jovovich.
Mila Jovovich.
Because of the Resident Evil character that mm-hmm. she plays is very, very badass. Cherry 2000. Yep.
All right. Next up, we've got Sam Treadwell, played by David Andrews, who was 35. Who were you thinking for this one?
I went with a 48-year-old actor who is hot on my mind. He has been in films such as Never Been Kissed, Eight-Legged Freaks,
okay,
as well as the Scream franchise. I went with David Arquette.
Ah, okay. Nice.
And there's a lot of face value
there.
There
is. There is some there. All right. I like my next pick better than my first. My actor is 40 now. He was in The Killing, or on The Killing, I should say. He was on Altered Carbon. He was in the remake of RoboCop as RoboCop, and he's also in Suicide Squad. His name is Joel Kinnaman. Joel Kinnaman is going to be my Sam Treadwell. Next up, we've got Lester. Lester is played by Tim Thomerson, who was 41 at the time. And who were you thinking for this one, Sean?
I went much older. I went with a 66-year-old actor.
Oh, wow.
But I don't think it's really relevant to the part itself. But also, there is total face value involved. This actor has been in just a few films. He was in Texas Cotton.
Hmm.
He was in Best Worst movie. He was in Troll 2. I'm talking about George Hardy.
Oh, wow. He really does look like him. And a little bit like Craig T. Nelson.
Yes.
Interesting. You nailed that one, dude. You nailed it. Mine is a little bit better for the age range. So we've got an actor who is 43 now. He was in a few films. Magic Mike. Pee-wee's Big Holiday. Also, most people would know him from True Blood. And he was in Justice League. And in recent years, he's been in Sofia Vergara. His name is... I always butcher his name. Joe Manganiello is going to be my...
And he would be good. Hawaiian it's kind of a hammy role.
Yeah, and he loves to ham it up.
He does.
Who is next?
Cherry.
Ah, Cherry 2000 in the year 2017. It's outdated in 2017, but 2017 is outdated from now. Oh, okay, so Pamela Gidley was just 22. Who's your pick?
I'm with a 24-year-old actress.
Okay.
And she was in the Fosse Verdon FX series.
Hmm.
She was in Now Apocalypse. She was in Animal Kingdom, and she has a film that's in post-production right now called Cherry. Her name is Kelly Berglund.
That's pretty good, dude. Pretty, pretty good. All right. My actress is 27 now. She was in Tulip Fever, not the one you think. She was in Suicide Squad. She was in Paper Towns, Valerian, and she's on the new show, Carnival Row. Her name is Cara Delevingne.
Delevingne?
Delevingne. So, next up, we've got the role of Snappy Tom. Now, Snappy Tom is a member of the Death Cult who he falls on Lester's bad graces.
Yeah, he moves out.
Yeah.
And he has his own place, like a gas station or... Uh-huh. Some such, and he's got a young lady who sells them upstream, and the death cult comes for them.
Yes.
And he pays the price.
But the old lady also pays the price later. Oh, no, she kills their friend, the other guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so who is your Snappy Tom?
I went with a 68-year-old actor who's quite a chameleon, and he's been in so many things. I'm just going to gloss over some of the best. He is in the upcoming Masters of the Universe Revelation TV miniseries.
Okay.
He's in the current Perry Mason TV series.
Oh, I like the new Perry Mason. We were watching it last night.
He's in Barry.
Okay. Yeah.
With Bill Hader.
Yep.
He was in Dodgeball. He was in Office Space. I went with Stephen Root.
Yeah. Stephen Root. That's great. He's looking for his stapler.
Yes.
So my actor is 64 now. He was on the acclaimed HBO show Oz. He spent many years on Law and Order. He's also in Juno and Whiplash, the recent hit Palm Springs. And also you can see him working out on the internet. It's J.K. Simmons.
Nicely done, sir.
Do you want to see the picture of him working out on the internet?
Not really, but...
Yeah, you do.
Oh, shit.
He looks like the Lorax. Next, we decide if we're going to recommend this or not, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying hard recommend.
Yeah, I'm going to give it...
It's a fun movie.
I'm going to give it a recommend, too. Especially if you really enjoyed the first Mad Max movie.
Or if you liked The Fifth Element, or if you liked the Buckaroo Banzai, that kind of wackiness.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. There's some really fringy type things and some chuckles, and it doesn't take itself too seriously.
So one thing we failed to mention was that the reason that these sex robots came into popularity was because... sex life itself in the year 2017 has become very litigious.
Yes.
So all these couples are involving lawyers to work out their sexual activity.
Yeah, like the nightclubs and the meat markets, they're there with their lawyers and they're negotiating the terms. And not too far off the mark with regards to consent in this day and age.
That's true.
So pretty shrewd of them to put that in the script. I thought it was pretty clever.
All right, cool deal. So I guess with that, it's time to go into intermission, but not before we say,
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves some
cherry cobbler, Melanie candy, and milk money. All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. I am remiss, though, that I did not mention the theme of my picks in the first half. All of the actors that I picked for the Cherry 2000 remake are part of the DC Extended Universe.
Aha.
And so what do we like to do when we come back from intermission, Sean?
Beer check-in. But today is a special day. We're not going to have beer. We're going to have mead.
Ooh, yummy.
It's funny you should mention Cherry 2000. Because we're going to be enjoying cherry cobbler from Garage East Meadery in
Nice.
Tampa.
Beautiful bottle, too. I love how they get so fancy with the mead bottles. They're tall and slender, like a skinny champagne bottle.
Oh, wow. This smells like fresh-made cherry cobbler. It's got cinnamon hits and sugar graham type, you know, crust.
It's beautiful, like a beautiful blood red color. Oh, wow. Wow, so reminiscent of the actual dish cherry cobbler.
This is like dessert at Thanksgiving.
So good. Mm. Wow. Okay. Very nice. Well, let's go ahead and get into the next segment, which is the 2020 Movie Marathon. It is the 220th day of the 2020 Movie Marathon, and I am on number 274. Sean, what are you on?
285.
And so we should mention that this is a exercise in diligence and perseverance and stamina, really.
Fortitude.
And what we do is we try to watch as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year, new movies to us, and we check them in on, not on Untappd, well, sometimes. We check them in on Letterboxd and with the hashtag 2020 Movie Marathon. And then we also throw those over on Twitter and with the same hashtag. Mine are under the Cinema Chop Shop handle. Sean, you can find his under A Windowless Van. So what's your first check-in for this week?
I am going to check in Now and Then.
Okay.
This is from 1995.
I've seen it.
And I can hear the pitch meeting.
Yes.
It's like Stand By Me, but with girls.
Yes.
And it's got Rosie O'Donnell. It's got Melanie Griffith, of course. It has
Demi Moore.
Demi Moore. As well as Rumor Willis as a child actor in there.
Christina Ricci.
Christina Ricci. Thora Birch.
Rosie O'Donnell.
I said Rosie O'Donnell. Okay. Oh, Rita Wilson.
Yep.
And an extensive supporting cast. And I said to you the other night, I dare anyone to try to bankroll these actors in a film today. Way. It would be far, far too expensive. Very nostalgic, very sweet, with just a light touch of borderline kiddie porn.
Okay.
Well, the girls are spying on the little boys and they're skinny dipping.
So they're like, you guys want to go see a naked body?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's cute. It's a sweet movie. It's something that you could watch with your mom.
As I did, sir. As I did. All right. My first check-in. Oh, speaking of moms, my mom texted me last night and said that they were watching The Peanut Butter Falcon for Woo-hoo! The first time.
Sorry,
and
Dana.
She said, it is so good.
Drink.
All right. So my first check-in is going to be a movie that's getting a little bit of mixed reviews. I loved it. It's exactly the type of movie for me. It's number 272, and it's called An American Pickle. And I said, I thought it was great fun. An immigrant worker falls in a vat of pickles and is preserved for 100 years. He is discovered alive but bewildered in present-day Brooklyn.
Is this the Seth Rogen movie?
It is, yes. It dropped on HBO Max yesterday. And it's great. It's one of those formula movies where you've got the actor playing opposite himself. So it's not really a spoiler. It happens in the first act. When he wakes up, the person who comes to claim him from the hospital because they track down his DNA is also Seth Rogen, but a descendant of the Seth Rogen that gets preserved in the pickle vat. So it's got a little bit of Idiocracy feel to it. It's got a little bit of Croc 2 in New York feel to it.
A little Encino Man.
A little Encino Man, exactly. Forever Young. So yeah. Oh, also it preserves him perfectly. So he and his descendant are exactly the same age.
Okay.
So yeah, check it out.
I will.
A lot of fun.
That's great. Keeping it on the Melanie Griffith theme, I'm checking in Forever Lulu from 2000. This movie pairs Melanie Griffith with Patrick Swayze.
Uh-oh.
So Melanie Griffith plays a schizophrenic and she checks herself out of her mental health care facility.
Goes off her meds.
And
starts tracking
down her former love, who she claims they had a child together that she did not tell him about. Penelope Ann Miller is Patrick Swayze's wife in this.
Okay.
They're having some marital problems because, as it turns out, they had a child and it died like the year before.
Oh, so this only exacerbates the situation.
Yes. So the two go on a long road trip to Madison, Wisconsin.
To see the bridges.
To meet their biological child, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Joey Gordy-Levi's.
This is a thoroughly meh movie.
Okay.
I don't think that even Patrick Swayze and
Melanie Griffith?
Joey Gordy-Levi's.
Oh, okay.
Could save this movie. Melanie Griffith, it is from year 2000. It's right when she's getting her crow feet. She looks really good, beautiful in this film. And there's a scene of her taking a naked dive off the diving board at a hotel pool.
She's good for that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that her attitude was, well, if I've got it.
Yeah.
So
nice.
So one thing I noticed is that she's from New York, but she doesn't have a New York accent.
And she plays a lot of Southern characters.
But she also plays a lot of New Yorkers in a lot of the movies we were just talking about, or have been talking about, like Shining Through and also A Stranger Among Us. She's playing somebody from New York. Working Girl, she's playing somebody from New York.
By the way, for the listeners, we are having our 100th thunderstorm of the week.
Yes.
Right now, so if you hear any background noise.
Is it afternoon in summertime in South Carolina? Okay, so my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, get ready. This is for all our cage ragers out there. This movie is called Between Worlds. And it's one of those movies for the unhinged cage fans. Came out in 2018. I'm just getting around to seeing it. It's got an insane plot. But sorry, he's too old for so many graphic sex scenes. During one such scene, he starts reading aloud from a poetry book called Memories of Nicolas Cage. And I read an interview with him. He's like, I just always wanted to do that. So the movie is really wackadoodle. We've got this guy who's a trucker, and he's in mourning from his dead wife and daughter. And he has like a, they don't actually explicitly say it, but they hint that he has a really strong sense of hearing. And he breaks up a woman being strangled in the bathroom at a convenience store, thinking that she's being attacked. But it turns out that that lady is, she had an out-of-body experience when she was a kid where she almost drowned. And now if she gets choked out, she can commune with the dead.
Wow.
And so as soon as she comes to from being choked and the guy who was choking her is laying on the ground, she gets a phone call. She's like, my daughter just came out of a coma. And so they go to the hospital, and the daughter is sure enough out of a coma, but only for a minute. So they go into the hallway, and Nicolas Cage chokes out the mom. And then when they get back, the daughter is awake again, but she's very different.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not going to spoil how different she is or how that came about. I figured it out before they revealed it, but it's stupid silly.
Awesome. That sounds...
It was fun.
It sounds fun, yeah.
Watch it while your wife is taking a nap. That's my recommendation.
Okay. My final check-in for the week is a documentary from 2020 called Making Apes, The Artists Who Changed Film. And this is a doc that looks at the Herculean task of creating the special effects makeup for arguably the most pivotal sci-fi movie in history.
Dunstan checks in.
Planet of the Apes.
Oh, so close.
There are other people who are more... eloquent in speaking about Planet of the Apes than I, Dana Gould being one, our contemporary, our fellow podcaster.
Yeah, one of our peers.
From the Dana Gould Hour. He is a huge fan of Planet of the Apes, and he actually appears in this doc in a couple of scenes. But it really gives you a good look at the crew, the guys that are still living, who worked on the film. And if you've never seen Planet of the Apes, the 1960s version, check it out. It was a cultural phenomenon. And without this movie, you would not have the studios taking the risk of putting money behind science fiction and fantasy films, which means you don't get Star Wars. You do not get the Star Trek movies, which then further leads to the fantasy films of the 80s, Labyrinth, yep. Neverending Story, and so on and so forth on today to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Those don't exist without this movie.
And it was all practical effects,
too. They were practical effects, but it was a huge risk for 20th Century Fox. They could have lost their asses if this movie didn't succeed. It would have put that studio underground.
As bad as Tim Burton and Marky Mark Wahlberg?
They actually talk about that movie a little bit. Rick Baker did the makeup effects for that film. And Rick Baker's a legend in Hollywood in makeup. And that's probably one of the few really good things about that movie.
Well, after that one is where they went all CGI.
Yes.
All right, my final check-in for this week is going to be Becky, and it came out in 2020. It's a very bloody home invasion slash revenge flick, like an R-rated Home Alone. Also, Kevin James is a little bit too convincing as the neo-Nazi prison escapee who's on a mission to find a certain MacGuffin.
This is in my queue to watch.
It's good.
People who listen to the show know I'm a big fan of casting comedic actors in serious roles.
Yeah.
And when I saw his headshot for this, I was like, oh, I've got to see this.
Oh, he's very intimidating, but it is very intensely violent.
Okay.
From both directions.
Okay.
And I think that's basically the theme of the movie. They messed with the wrong girl. All right. So that will wrap us up on the 2020 movie marathon for this week, which brings us to the second part of our feature segment, The Recast Continued.
Part two.
The sequel.
Double D's.
And so the movie, for a double dose of her pimpin', the movie that we're going to recast this time is Working Girl from 1988. It's got an 83% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was directed by Mike Nichols, who we've talked about before. Savvy New York receptionist Tess McGill, played by Melanie Griffith, gives her conniving boss, Catherine Parker, Sigourney Weaver, an excellent business tip. But Catherine simply steals the idea without giving due credit to her secretary. After Catherine winds up in the hospital with an injured leg, Tess decides to exact revenge. Pretending to be her boss, Tess initiates a major deal with an investment broker, played by Harrison Ford. But things turn ugly after Catherine finds out what Tess has been up to. So there is something I want to mention. There's a crossover episode, or not a crossover episode. There's an episode of Bob's Burgers where for the school play, they do a mashup of Working Girl and Die Hard. And it's called Work Hard or Die Tryin', Girl. All right, so
I have a yes. couple of things to say about yes. the film. Mike Nichols, talented director. Yes. However, there are some sloppy things in this film. I commented on one to you.
Oh, the tracking shot?
There is a reverse tracking shot where they're walking, Harrison Ford and Melanie Griffith are walking and talking in New York City. And that, of course, is where you lay a track down and the camera pulls backwards. There are two guys that are pulling the dolly back. Mm-hmm. And so people file in and fill in the space as the camera goes by to create the illusion that you're walking on a busy street. Sloppy work, though. The camera picks up where people don't fill in fast enough, and you can see the track that the camera's okay. rolling on. Second, Melanie Griffith has a very defined jawline. And it's not ugly. It's a very pretty jaw. However, the lighting director should have been kicked in the nuts because there's a nighttime shot where she's talking to her former lover outside, and it makes her look so fat because the light strikes the side of her face and casts this huge shadow on her neck.
Gotcha.
So some negatives on that.
When you were telling me about the reverse tracking shot, I think your phone auto-corrected instead of Melanie Griffith, it said Meg Griffin.
Meg Griffin.
Because you know you're texting about Family Guy so much.
If you do participate in Letterboxd,
uh-huh.
one of the greatest reviews of this film, because people gush about Harrison Ford and how hot he is in this movie, okay. and said, there's a sequel to this film. It's called Twerking Girl. And it's me grinding on Harrison Ford's face.
Oh, wow. That is going there.
You want some more of that mead?
I love that mead, but don't we have something else
check in? We do. For some reason, I've had this beer in my house, and for some reason it spoke to me that it needed to be on this episode. It's mm-hmm. called Coconut Summer Stout.
Oh, okay. I get it.
It's from Brown Truck Brewing in High Point, North Carolina. And if you've ever had Seminar Brewing's Crowfoot Stout or our Croconut, this should remind you of that because it is a very light-bodied stout and not terribly heavy. And I figure it might taste really nice after that cherry mead.
Yeah, I'm glad that we did them in that order because I think that drinking a sweeter stout beer and then a mead would be reverse order of operations. I'm going to give it a try here. It's a little bit lighter than I expected
yeah.
in terms of like texture and mm-hmm. body. I'm not getting a huge amount of coconut, but that could be the mead as well.
Yeah, I think the mead's kind of killing our palates just a tad.
Nevertheless, it is nice. Let's go ahead and get into the roles that we're going to recast, okay? First, we've got the savvy New York receptionist, Tess McGill, played by Melanie Griffith, who was 31 at the time. Then we've got the executive and love interest, Jack Traynor, played by Harrison Ford, who was 46. And 46 is young for Harrison Ford. then we've got Catherine Parker, the villainous and demanding boss, played by Sigourney Weaver, who was 39. Then we've got Mick Dugan, Tess's cheating boyfriend, played by a 30-year-old Alec Baldwin. Very sleazy, greasy Alec Baldwin.
Staten Island, baby.
Yeah. And then we've got Cynthia, who is Tess's best friend, played by the amazing Joan Cusack.
She's a cartoon character.
Well, in general, she is.
But in this film especially.
I love her, though.
Such high hair.
I like her almost as much or as much as her brother. All right, next, let's go ahead and get your Tess McGill, Sean.
All right, this is a tough one. Melanie in a very leading type mm-hmm. role where she's empowered. But at the same time, she, the Staten Island thing, I mean, very comes off very kind of ditzy at first, but ambitious. So with that, I kind of wanted to go the same route and cast someone who is in the same vein. 30-year-old actress. And she was in The Last Song. God, she must have been young during that. But I liked her in Mr. Robot. You've chopped her.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of her role as Dahlia Royce in the TV series Suburgatory in this. I went with Carly Chaykin.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of borderline vapid, ditzy. But,
I can see it.
But something's going on behind the scenes.
Okay, my actress is 31 now, and I think she's really going to play this part well. She's a woman of diminutive stature. She's a shorty, and she also has some wild blonde curly hair. And she is 31 now. She was in Killer Joe with Nicolas Cage. She was on the TV show Vinyl. She was in The Brass Teapot and Atonement. Her name is Juno Temple.
Very nice.
Juno Temple is going to be my Tess.
Yeah. Rewatched Vinyl recently.
Such a good show.
Should not have been canceled.
Yeah. In fact, the finale, they kind of had to wrap things up too fast in Vinyl. Next up, we've got Jack Traynor, played by Harrison Ford. He was 46. Who's your pick?
I went with a Kiwi actor.
Huh.
He's 48 years old. And he can be seen in such films as Doom, Dread, Lord of the Rings, Star Trek, and The Boys. I went with Carl Urban.
Carl Urban. You urbanized that role. My actor. This one's funny. I didn't get his age, but I think he's 45 or 46. His breakout role was in Joe's Apartment. He was on the TV show Sliders. He was in Kangaroo Jack, Scream 2, Satanic Panic, and John Stamos Presents Sloppy Seconds. It's Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah, I looked at Jerry O'Connell.
Next, we've got Sigourney. Sigourney Weaver was 39, playing Catherine Parker, the villainous and undercutting boss. So who was your pick for this one?
You know, Sigourney Weaver's so good. And it's a shame.
Drink.
Because, yeah, but she's such a talented actress, and it's a shame that Melanie Griffith had to share screen time with her, because Sigourney shows you what she can do. She has the depth to play the conniving, malicious boss, but in a turn, she throws on the charm and the sexuality to try to get Harrison to come to bed with her, and she's playing it all cute, and she shows her range in this film. And I wanted an actress who kind of has that same kind of ability, as well as having the depth to play some serious roles.
Okay,
this actress is 39 years old as well. She was in Black Swan, V for Vendetta, Closer, yes. And Leon. It's the first time I've ever recast her that I can remember. I went with.
Are you gonna go back to the files?
Natalie Portman.
Natalie Portman is an amazing pick for this. You can see her being like, sometimes she comes off as a little bit too nice,
mm-hmm.
but you can see her flipping the script on that and just being. So my actress is 38 now. She's on the TV show Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. She was in The Purge. She was in Tenet. And she's in Cult of Chucky because she's the daughter of Brad Dourif, Fiona Dourif.
Oh, cool. Well, look at her.
Most of her filmography is horror films, too.
She has a lot of face value, yeah. For sure. Wow.
Thank you, sir. Next, we've got Alec Baldwin playing Mick Dugan. Tess's cheating boyfriend. Alec was 30 at the time. Who is your pick?
So, yeah, Alec was dumb.
Yeah.
He was dumb, mean, just Staten Island boy. No offense to people from Staten Island, but you
except
do.
Except for.
You do carry stereotypes.
Except for the king of Staten Island.
Oh, my God. And the Impractical Jokers.
True.
So this actor, he is...
Pete Davidson.
32 years old, and it's not Pete Davidson. He was in the series Imposters. He was in Enlisted. He had a brief stint on the TV series Arrow.
Okay.
And ironically, he was on the TV show Suburgatory. His name is Parker Young.
All right. Yeah, I can see it. I get a little Baldwin off of that, a little young Baldwin.
Yeah.
Dumb. Maybe a little bit more Steven or William.
But... yeah, and Suburgatory was kind of like the dumb football player boyfriend guy.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know that I ever saw that show.
Oh, it's a good one. You should go back and check it out.
All right. My McDougan is 30 now. He was in Perfect High, Teen Beach Movie 2, 13 Reasons Why, and Riverdale. His name is Ross Butler. Ross Butler. I did a little bit of an ethnic swap there.
I like it. That's cool.
And he's real douchey on a lot of the shows.
Oh, is he?
He's
okay.
Yeah. Finally, right? Finally, yep. We've got Cynthia, Tess's best friend, played by Joan Cusack, who's 26 at the time. Who did you go with for this one, Sean?
I love this pick. I went with a 27-year-old actress and musician from Boca Raton, Florida. Hmm. I've never recast her before. She is a master at doing impressions, if you've ever watched her on Jimmy Fallon.
Okay.
She was in Hairspray Live. She was in Zoolander 2. She was in Scream Queens. And originally, she was on one of the Nickelodeon, I guess,
blah, or blah,
Disney
blahs.
Shows, Sam and Cat. I went with Ariana Grande.
Very nice, dude. As soon as you said impressions, I knew who you were talking about. She did a bunch of those on SNL also, I think.
She's so talented.
Yeah, she's great. And she can do that big hair.
Yeah.
My actress is 25 now. She was in The Nun, The Final Girls. She was on American Horror Story. She's in The Bling Ring and a movie called In a Valley of Violence, which I recommend.
Hmm.
Her name is Thaisa Farmiga. Thaisa Farmiga is going to be my...
she's really good.
Yeah, she is. And she's also the younger sister of Vera Farmiga.
Yeah, okay. And boy, family resemblance too. Wow.
All right. So, I'm going to say recommend.
Oh, definitely. On this Working is a good Girl. This is a good movie. It's a good lot movie. Of fun.
It got Melanie Griffith the Golden Globe, right? Oh no, that was the Something Wild. Maybe. I could be wrong. It happens.
Wrong, Travis.
All right. So, other notable performers in this film include Olympia Dukakis as the personnel director, David Duchovny as one of Tess's birthday party friends, and Ricky Lake as a bridesmaid.
Don't forget Oliver Platt in original job she had, and Nora Dunn being one of the conniving, bitchy ladies from, she was from SNL.
Yes.
And she was in that as well.
Cool deal. All right. So yeah, recommends all around on Working Girl. That brings us to our final bonus segment. And I'm going to leave this up to you. Do you want to do it as a tag team wrestling match or as a battle royale?
Tag team wrestling match.
All right, so you get to pick first which team you want or which team you think would win, okay?
Okay.
So it is going to be a tag team wrestling match between Melanie Griffith, Andy Griffith, versus Peter Griffin and Kathy Griffin.
Well, first of all, we know that Peter Griffin can take a beating.
As we've seen in the chicken episode.
Oh, boy. However, we're talking about in their prime, Andy Griffith was the law.
Mm-hmm.
And he distributed justice fairly and evenly. However, Melanie Griffith...
are you talking about Matlock?
No, I'm talking about Andy Griffith's show. Melanie Griffith, I don't know what she can bring to the table. I mean, she's got physicality.
She can fight tigers.
No, she can. Kathy Griffin, I'm not feeling Kathy Griffin, man.
I'm not feeling Kathy Griffin these days.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Melanie and Andy.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. Now, Peter's going to give it his best, but Kathy Griffin's just going to kind of whine and be snarky.
Yeah.
All right. So we figured that one out pretty quickly. We want to go ahead and wrap up the show. I want to thank the engineer. Ask if there's anything you want to plug, sir.
We've got some cannings coming up at the brewery, so keep your eyes peeled. Plus, we also have the return of a beer that has been asked for many, many times, and that should be coming up soon.
Well, I did see the other day that Rye Smile is back on.
Rye Smile's back on, but there's another old favorite coming up soon, so check that out. But I also always want to plug Right Answers with Wrong Travis.
Your weekly trivia contest at Seminar Brewing. So, do you know what next week's episode is?
These are the films of Julie Newmar.
And I got mixed up on my dates. I was prepared for a different episode. So I want you to do the trivia question this week.
Okay, here we go. So Julie Newmar was often associated with her role as Catwoman on the TV series Batman. However, when Batman the movie came out, featuring actors from the television series, Julie Newmar was not in the Catwoman role. The question is, which actress played Catwoman in Batman the movie?
Is it Eartha Kitt?
It is not.
Is it Michelle Pfeiffer?
No.
Is it Halle Berry Hallelujah?
No.
Who is it?
It's Lee Merriweather.
Okay. Lee Merriweather. All right. Well, that will be your sneak preview question and answer for this week's edition of Trivia. So with that, we want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on your podcatcher apps. We're also hosted online at cinemachopshop.podbean.com. Our Twitter is at cinemachopshop. Don't at me about whether or not Dunstan was an ape. we are on Facebook. It's Cinema Chop Shop on there. Our email is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And the beers that we checked in today, we'll check those in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. Finally, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for checking us out. Tell all your friends about us. And please remember to
watch, chop, retrofit.